it is. It's basketball. It's not a fucking soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NBL Podcast. My guest this week is Body Nodge of BodyNodge.com and the Brad and Body Podcast. Before we jump into this episode, just a reminder to rate the show with stars on whatever app you happen to listen to it on. Write a review if you wish, and also subscribe to the program so that when a new one comes out, it automatically downloads into your device. On this episode with Body, we talk about a couple of things. Quickly, we talk about the Boomers and the NBL Awards to see if we had any problems with the way they fell. But then more importantly, we do an NBL 20 post-mortem. We look at every single team. We look at whether we enjoyed watching them play, their positives, the negatives, and the road for them going forward next season into NBL 21. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks very much.
Boomers, they just beat Hong Kong. But before that, the game, I mean, maybe I'm a glutton for punishment, but the game I want to talk about is that loss to New Zealand.
Yeah.
What happened? Is it too simple to say Nathan Sobey had a bad game and they were really relying on him?
No, I just don't think it was a team that had had an opportunity to get itself together in the way New Zealand already had. The core of the New Zealand team was there. The core of the Australian team is not there. I mean, if you're being serious, the core of the Australian team right now, a serious Australian team, is Joe Ingles, Paddy Mills, Matthew Dellavedova, Aaron Baines.
Simmons.
No, he hasn't played. No, I'm talking about what the core is, Andrew Bogut, and maybe even Ryan Brokoff. You'd say that's the core. Now you add Simmons and other pieces to that, and it becomes something really exciting. But that's your core. Now, with New Zealand, your core is guys like Shaley and Ruben Tarangi and Mika Vekona, Thomas Abercrombie, who wasn't there, but, you know, Alex Pledger, who wasn't there because of the, you know, other commitments they have. But you see, their core was still intact, So they're already in better shape than the Australian team is, because if you're saying, oh, well, our core is Hodgson, Kadee, Sobey and Glidden, well, you know, they're not going to – yeah, we're not talking about the same sorts of relevant groups to each team as we are when we're talking about the New Zealand core who are there, you know. Even Jordan Natai, you know, he's been around for a while in that group. So what the pieces they add are the Corey Websters and Corey's brother and other bits and pieces of that. The pieces we add to our core makes us a medal threat. But if you go back to this situation, Asia Cup qualifiers, well, they are always going to have the edge on us. So I don't think we should read too much into that. I do think we picked a pretty ordinary team, but, you know, be that as it may.
Tarangi. Yep. You mentioned Tarangi. I just thought, watching that game, did it suggest that he was underutilized at Brisbane, or did it reaffirm to you, which it did to me, that confidence is key in everything, and basketball especially?
Both. Absolutely both. You know, given the opportunity to be who he is in that team and the relevance that he has to that Tall Blacks team, he was Ruben Tarangi as we know him. He wasn't given that opportunity at Brisbane. I think Brisbane's choice of imports, I mean, they didn't have the worst season of all time, but their choice of imports basically cut across him, and he was the one that probably suffered the most. So I don't know if he's a free agent at the moment, but if he is, if I'm someone like Cairns who are now a contender, I'd be looking at him very hard.
Piero Cameron, you said at the top of your article you like the way that he kind of just oozed, I wouldn't even say confidence, just stoic. He didn't, nothing fazed him at all. I really thought he was just entertaining and also did well on the sidelines.
And quite prepared to hand over the reins to his assistants. Yeah. If an assistant, you know, we're going to need a inbounds play here. All right, you got one? Good, you take it. And, you know, has the confidence in delegating to his personnel. So he obviously feels confident about the people around him. He's not insecure about himself. You know, you don't see coaches do that terribly often. And I think it's again, hats off to Perro. I loved him as a player. I really did. He was just, you know, people were saying, oh, if he got fitter or if he was in better shape or if he was this or he was that. He had just a knack and an understanding for the game that was inherent, and he was able to do magical things. He didn't need to be, you know, 20 kilos lighter or muscle up or bulk up. He was just fun to watch. You know, he's an all-star five at a world championship in 2002, all-star five. Mm. Well, you know, so in that tournament, he was one of the best five players in the world. So I think he had an outstanding playing career, and I think the coaching career is going to be very similar judging on what we just saw.
You know what? The only mistake he made in his career was playing for Gold Coast. A man of his size in that light powder blue. I don't know. That's a tough one to pull. NBL awards. The surprises. To me, the surprises were Kadir at sixth man. Did you see it that way, or are we?
No, not that I didn't see it that way. I didn't see it coming. I was kind of more into Kyle Adnam and that sort of player, Sean Bruce, who had come in and really made noticeable impacts. But they were making noticeable impacts on teams that we tended to focus on more than Brisbane. Like Brisbane only really came into focus in the last third of the season, really, when they were suddenly like, oh, they actually might be a bit of a chance. And that's when I think the mainstream, we started to pay more attention to Brisbane. And then, you know, by that stage, who knows how well Jason had been coming off the bench. I mean, I watched a lot of Brisbane games. He was very good for him. But, he wasn't uppermost in your mind. Your Sean Bruce type of player was.
Yeah. Brandon Ashley, for me, I was one, but maybe he has the same. Yeah, I just thought his first half of the year was not particularly good, though. But you're very right. Once they started to get the heat in the eyes, Ashley, I thought, was coming in and being, well, he was closing games and being really impactful. But a surprise, but I don't think either of us thought, oh, that's an injustice.
That's a bad, it's a bad call. No, it wasn't a bad call.
Nick Kay. Oh, sorry. No,
buddy, go on. No, you're going to say Nick Kay
over Cam Oliver in the first team. Surprised. Bit of a picket injustice.
I think because of this foolishness where people aren't prepared to be brave and bold and say, we're going to pick an all-star five, a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, we're going to pick 3 outside players and 2 inside players, so we basically cover our tails. And so in that instance, well, you can't really argue. Perth finished second, Cairns finished third. You've got to have a couple of Perth boys in there. And he's had a very consistent season. So, okay, so in the first team, you've got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 4. And then in the second team, you've got Cam Oliver and Andrew Bogut. So you've got a 1, 2, 3, 5, 5. So if they had had the courage to just go, then you've got Cam Oliver probably is in the first team. But because they've gone that way, I don't really have an issue with it. I thought Nick Kay, post-World Cup, in the early part of the season, I thought he was a little bit off. You know, well, he was a bit ordinary, like he was having a little bit of a hangover maybe from the World Cup. Mm. But then as the season, you know, as we start to get to the midpoint and the second half, I thought he was terrific,
Bogut in the second team over what the most likely candidate to replace him would be Mitch Creek and maybe Sean Long, but I think we're talking Mitch Creek here. I was surprised by this one, were you?
Possibly because of the whole managing him and just the whole, Andrew hasn't had the impact this season that he had last season, obviously. I mean, he was the MVP 1 year and he's not in the conversation this year. So obviously he hasn't had the impact. Is he still in the 10 best players probably.
Yeah.
So what's the debate whether he should be there or Mitch should be there? Well, it's a tough one.
I just thought Mitch was a serious MVP candidate. Was the MVP for the first 5 rounds, give or take.
Yes.
And then was a serious candidate thereafter. I just thought he was the guy on the team and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, Bogut, I mean, 20 minutes. Oh, sorry, buddy.
I was going to say, did you not think, though, that there was a period in the season where Mitch faded a bit at the same time as South East Melbourne faded a bit? Because they started off like a house on fire.
I agree totally. It's when they started going on the road in the later the year. But I felt like, I think that's more an indication of how good Creek was when he started to take that step back. So did they. I think he was also a bit injured is the thing you don't hear with that. But I think he took a step back and was playing maybe 25 minutes, which is still 4 more than Bogut averaged all year. So I felt Bogut was, I just think Creek was a workhorse. He really worked hard the first start of the year and the tail end of the year and had that drop off. But when you put it all together, I thought it was good enough for NBL second team.
But if you're going 3 outside players and 2 inside, Creaky's playing the 3 spot.
That'd be an inside player, wouldn't it?
Well, no, because you've got Ty Wesley and Dane Pinot in the 4-5. So you've got to look at him as an outside player. So Bogut can't be your focus who he should replace.
Coach of the year, Mike Kelly. Should a coach of the year go to a coach that lost to Illawarra 3 times?
That is a very unique take on it, and
it's cruel to put the two together. But I mean, well, geez.
Should it go to somebody that beat Perth, that beat
on the road,
Sydney? Yeah, I think you find the counter argument is just as strong. I think there was Mike Kelly and then there was Daylight, to be honest. I was rating Will Weaver's performance earlier in the year. Now you can say, well, look, they were in first place from round one to round 20. You know, they won the regular season championship, blah, blah, blah. And in the early going, I was most impressed with what he was drawing out of Craig Moller and Sean Bruce. Like they had, those guys had flipped the switch, or he had flicked the switch, and they had moved into really good players. But the other guys, I mean, come on, you bring in Casper Ware, arguably the best point guard in the league, championship winning point guard. So you're in pretty good shape. Sean Tate turned out to be a very, very good basketball player. And you've still got, I know Lish was missing, but you look at the personnel, the Lish, the Brad Newley, who also had a bit of a lease of life. I don't know whether that was Will Weaver or it was just not Andrew Gaze. But, you know, like, and so I was giving him a lot more credit early in the season because of the development of these other guys that we weren't expecting, where there were games, I'm sure you remember them, when we think, gee, the bench really came through for Sydney today. And that's not what you'd expect to be saying when you've got guys like Bogut and Ware in your starters, that, oh, the bench came through. Like, how important were they? So I was a bit more impressed with them. I'm not quite the Weaver believer in the second stint of the season. So, you know, I think Mike Kelly, far and away, 6 wins last year and 16 this year. So
this is the argument here, and I'm kind of like, I'm a big believer in it's the NBL 20 coach of the year. Decks are cleared, whether you're paying $1 million or $100 million. Like, I mean, ask Melbourne about spending money and not quite getting the results you want. It's all about day one of the season. You step on the hoops are 10 feet tall. It does money come into this conversation in the NBL? In the NBA, it does, because you've got a draft and it's a bit more money. Whereas NBL, every year, I mean, we talk about that Cairns team last year that won 6. That team has one returning starter in DJ Newball.
Well, then how do you work out the most improved player? What do you base that on?
You base it on last year, I would think. I would love an award that rewards a guy who goes through the year, but is the coach of the year the most improved award?
No, but what I'm saying is, when you just look at what's happened in that program over the course, and let's just rate it on this year. Let's just rate it on this year. Did they get any wins that you thought, wow, I didn't expect them to win that? You bet your bottom dollar they did. And did they get a few losses you didn't expect? Yeah, Illawarra. But once they pulled themselves together, once they actually worked out how to win games, because they lost a game to Sydney at home very early in the season, which they wouldn't have in the run home. And I don't know what to make of the last weekend of the season, so maybe we'll get back to that later. But I think the improvement in that group, the way they played, the confidence. You know, we talked about Perro Cameron earlier and the way that he's sort of quite relaxed on the sideline. Well, Mike Kelly definitely gives you that impression. And if you're churning up on the floor and you're getting all worked up, and you look over and your coach is like, hey, it's cool. And he's got faith in you. You just start to feel better about yourself. So I don't think it was any dispute.
Let's do this. Let's go into an NBL 20 postmortem. What we'll do is we'll go in reverse order of the ladder and get your thoughts, Botty. And what we're also going to do is, and we spoke about this earlier, is try and assign a song to each team that signifies their year and the way it went, or just a storyline that you thought is applicable to that team. we're going to do, I've got a sort of semi-standardized question, because I want to try and do really dissect each team fairly and evenly. The standardizing question is going to go as such. Did you enjoy watching this team as a pure fan, just watching them? Did you enjoy their style? Second question, the big positives. Third question, the big negative. Fourth question, any obvious deficiencies in your mind to address for next season? And then the fifth question will be, song that best sums up their season. Let's start right at the bottom. Illawarra. 5-23, up 7 wins on NBL 20. I actually prescribed them a song at the start of the year that I thought was going to sum up their year. And I used, do you know Red Gum, Only 19?
God help me.
You're going into war with a very young man. Yeah. And Melbourne Ball was 18. So
yes.
What did you think? Did you enjoy watching this team at any point during the year? If so, why not?
No, I didn't. I thought early in the piece, there was real confusion about roles, where people fit. You know, I thought that they were, that when they were starting initially, I think they were starting Ogilvy and Boone, and there was just, you know, Aaron Brooks was coming off the bench. I think there was a lot of confusion in how they went about the early going. I was not in the least bit thrilled to watch them. I enjoyed that overtime game where LaMelo Ball hit the three at the end to force it into overtime. I enjoyed that, absolutely. But that was one game out of the 28. I must admit there were moments when the Angus Glovers and Dan Greeters and Emmett Nahrs of that group got their opportunity and seized it. You always like that. You always like that. But generally speaking, if it was a Hawks game, I was not all that inclined to tune in.
Yep. The big positive, did you see anything where you thought, oh, that's cool. That's good
for, absolutely, or better for us? The kids, and I hope they've stitched them up in the longer term, because I liked what they did. I was really thrilled for Angus Glover after what he's been through on a personal level with his injuries, and yeah, I that was a positive. I thought they got their imports wrong. Maybe Josh Boone was okay, but you've already got AJ Ogilvy, so you know you're sort of doubling up there unnecessarily. And then the others, well, Brooks got hurt, so. Right, let's dismiss him. But the other two guys, what a waste of time.
Yeah, that was the big negative for me. Big negative was those two guys who just came in, and it's okay to come in and perform poorly. That happens. Sometimes you're good, sometimes you're bad. But I felt it was more than that with them. That were taking the piss a little bit. That was a negative. Any obvious deficiencies in your mind to address for next season?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, well, geez. Oh. Three imports that are of the level that's required.
Capable and committed, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't – the jury's out on Matt Flynn. I thought I thought he was a confused coach at times. I thought there were times when he thought he needed to – LaMelo Ball, he had to play LaMelo Ball because of all the hoo-ha all around that. And I just I don't know that he really coached the way he would want to, like if he was in total control. I think there were – external factors that influenced what he was doing. Now, I could be completely wrong. I'm just taking that from what I watched and the erratic nature of that group. And I think, you know, teams are always a reflection of their coach, always, and their coach's personality in team sport. You just see it. So, you look at it with the Adelaide 36ers going back, you know, they were cocky and arrogant in the Ken Cole era. They were, 24-2, and they just played like we own you, and that's the attitude that Ken gave. Then when in the Phil Smythe era, when they were winning championships, they were a lot more laid back and having fun, just like the coach. So you know, I always believe in that. I think there was, I'm not sure yet about Matt Flynn as an NBL head coach.
Next Stars program, did you like it? Did you feel it's going to leave a lasting impression on the NBL? The other, and keeping in mind, did you feel, this is the first time I've been so close to the NBA draft. You know, I felt like I had a bit of an input into like how players mature and stuff. Did you enjoy being a part of that precursor to the NBA draft?
Oh, look, I think it's interesting in the fact that it brought a lot of attention to our league was all positive. But I don't like the fact that the NBL just plays fast and loose with what it is. Now, if we're going to allow Didi Luzada to be part of that program, he's already been drafted, then what that says is that a couple of years ago, James Ennis, who had already been drafted,
was a next star.
He was a next star. So, I mean, what are you doing? Well, what's going on here? Like, we're going to make exceptions? Now, I'm telling you now, Josh Giddey will be in the next stars program next season. If he doesn't go play college ball, they'll have him as a next star because he's going to be in the draft in 2021. So when you start to fudge the parameters of what it's supposed to be from what it was, which was initially pioneered by Joey Wright and the Adelaide 36ers with Terrence Ferguson, this is a kid that is not going to go to college but is going to come and play in the NBL instead and get drafted after that. Now, if that's your rules, then let's have those rules in place and not be piddling around to allow other guys in. I mean, LaMelo had already played as a professional
in Lithuania.
So you sort of, you go, well, what's the rule exactly? Are we just, this guy's all right, let's whack him in, you know. Mm. And then you wonder where Terry Armstrong fit into that whole thing, because for him, I'm not sure that playing in Australia was anything but a waste of time.
I agree. And the thing I didn't like is when they both, well, with the two major next stars in Hampton and Ball, when they left mid-season, I felt like the NBA monetary pressure and brand pressure impacted them not to play. I didn't like being a part of it at all. I didn't find that. When they were playing, I thought it was fantastic. Whether they played well or not, it's about their development, it's about their sort of cachet, whatever you want to call it. But when they stopped playing, and it wasn't because I find it hard to believe they were that injured.
No.
When they stopped playing for that reason, I thought this is sleazy, this is wrong, I don't like it. But other than that,
Tend to agree. So we had, hang on, did we do?
Oh no, you're right.
Songs for the Illawarra Hawks.
Do you have a song for the Illawarra Hawks?
well, you know, you go first because yours will be contemporary. Mine will be from a different era.
I'm not so sure. Mine is from Huey Lewis and the News' 1984 album Sports, and it's a song called. Well, I won't say the song, David, but it's about how, you know how people say sometimes, oh, he's so good, he's bad? Like, oh, that was bad. Yeah. But the Huey Lewis song is called Bad is Bad, and it's about sometimes you say bad to be cool, sometimes bad is bad. I'll play it underneath in the podcast. That's my song for the Illawarra Hawks, sadly.
Oh, yeah, well, mine was Running on Empty. I had John Lennon, The Dream Is Over originally, but I thought, no, they were just running on empty in the end. So.
Yeah, they were very, anyway, let's jump on. Southeast Melbourne, we mentioned Terry Armstrong. The song I chose at the start of the year was The Who Are You? We didn't know who they were going to be. They finished 9-19, first season, so we don't know where they went up and down. Let's go back to the standardized testing. Did you enjoy watching them? They had a very up and down start. Yeah, me too.
No. I did. I absolutely enjoyed watching them. I thought they played with great enthusiasm and they were into it. They were enjoying their basketball. And I thought the way they started the season was phenomenal. Had they been able to maintain that through, then they'd still be in the conversation because they would be in the playoffs. But they were unable to sustain it. And then when you start looking at their injury issues, you know, losing Ty Wesley in the very first game, in the very first quarter of the first game, when he already has some nice numbers. Yeah. And then you look at who came in, who went out, they hung on to Benson. And then I've seen some stuff around social media where actually their numbers as a team with Benson playing were far better than they were.
I have seen that, buddy. Yeah. You know how? Because I put that out there.
There you go. There you go. So I thought it was someone really intelligent. So they were actually better performed. Well, you tell me because you did it.
I did. You just got a lot of blocks, buddy. And I felt like this team more than anything lacked that. Just someone in the paint who took up space. Dane Pinot is a great rebounder, but does he take up space defensively? Not as much as Benson, I would think. And but more than anything with that, I thought it's a real experiment with imports. When you've got one who's on the line, it's a really interesting conversation. Do you pull the pin or do you just go, you know what, do what the Wildcats did last season and say, we're not entirely happy with who we've got, or we've only got two, or we want to make them. But you know what? We're just going to dig our heels in. It's when do you hold them? When do you fold them?
It's a real tough one. It is a real tough one because you fold them when you think you got something better.
Mm. And I don't think that's the thing. I think they thought they had the allure of something better, and I don't think it happened. And Walker, I think, is a nice player, and he didn't get a single win in the NBL, but I don't think it's his fault. Came into a weird situation, but he. They had to reach for him. You know, there was a gap in between, and I think they would have been better just to go, Keith, confidence is zero, but we're staying with you. Let's push on through the end of the year. Whether you play 20 minutes or 10, give us 10 good minutes, and I think they would have been better for it. I really do.
Yeah. Well, you know, benefit of hindsight, we're all in agreement. But I did enjoy watching them play. There was that game against Cairns was phenomenal when they pulled it out of, or John Robertson pulled it out of the fire with those late threes and the overtime. There were a lot of fun games that they were a part of, so definitely enjoyed watching them.
Be positive?
Well, I think their first year was, you'd have to rate it as a success. They probably not. They're looking at a 9-19 or whatever it was, and they're probably thinking, well, we didn't do all that brilliantly, but I reckon their season was very good. Very good. And for a new franchise, because they did start from scratch. You know, I get this stuff, I get really irritated, and we're going to get a lot of this over the next week and a half about, in the WNBL, about Southside Flyers being this new club, oh, we've started from scratch. You have not. You're freaking Dandenong Rangers rebranded. That's what you are, okay? So don't talk crap. You didn't start from scratch. I tell you who started from scratch. Southeast Melbourne Phoenix started from scratch. And for them to put that season together, excellent. They should be very, very pleased with what they did, because they established a brand and a culture, which is really hard to do in 1 year. But they did it.
I think Mitch Creek is the positive for me. I just felt like he... Yep. This was his first year as the guy of a team. He was not just on court, their marketing, their social media, that he was the team. And I thought he excelled really well. And I think other than a patch where he got hurt, which isn't well talked about, but I remember Mitchell kind of letting slip in a press conference. Yep. And that coincided with his dip in form. And as a result, their number of wins. And I felt, had that not happened. I mean, your thoughts on Walker? Did you think he was good?
I thought he looked like he might have been, but I think if for him to be successful for him to have been successful in that program, he needed to be right there from day one for the preseason and really know what his role was going to be, because obviously the man can shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. But we did, you know, I don't know. I thought it was, you know, hindsight, as I say, always 20/20. Mm-hmm. It was probably a mistake, but if they'd had him from day one, maybe not.
I mean, this team, 9-19, right? You look at that, they're six games off the finals. I just felt if they got what they wanted out of Benson, if Creek had been healthy, if Madgen had had the year he wanted, yep. I feel like this team would have been probably not made it still, but would have been right around that low teens, 13, yep. 14 yep. wins, and just those few little things. And they had some really close games. They lost five games by under 4 points, I think. You know, they had a couple of bunch of that. So, yeah, I, as you said, real success. Kendall Stevens, did you know that he played 339 minutes and didn't take a single free throw this season?
Yeah, I think I read that on social media, and I think you wrote that.
I'm not taking the piss. I just think that's amazing. That is Titanic all the way through, the movie Titanic, all the way through, and then watch it again 70% of the way through and no free throws. I probably would feign, if I was watching that at the cinema for that long, I'd probably pretend to practice a bit of shooting myself. Just to, that's a long time without a free throw, buddy.
Yes, it is. I'm not sure how pertinent that is, but it's definitely an interesting stat.
I keep coming back to this team. I talk about Benson, Josh Boone. I just feel like he would have been, and I put this example.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
He would have this old T-shirt. You know, everyone's got that old T-shirt that they do a bit of gardening in, take out the trash in. Maybe every now and again it gets a call up to go down to the shops for bread and milk. Josh Boone would have been that T-shirt for this team. He wouldn't have been a sexy hire of the import, but I think he would have helped them get to those low team wins for sure.
And yeah, and staying in Melbourne also, you know, we're across town from the – yeah, that's actually a good thought, real good thought. He would have definitely helped that team.
Do you have a song that best represents this team season, Mike?
Yeah, I have one. It's an old Little River Band song. It's A Long Way There.
And it's a long way there. It's a long way to where I'm going. And it's a long way there. It's a long way to where I'm going.
Yeah, I'll play that. I'm excited to listen to all that. That one I don't know. I had from Christopher Cross, again, probably a little bit old, Arthur's Theme, The Best That You Can Do. They were a young, little nouveau riche. They spent quite, but it, not bad for a first try. They, I felt like we did get the best foot forward. Yep. To your backyard, Adelaide 36ers, 12-16, down two wins on NBL 19, two consecutive years missing the playoffs. My first question, did you enjoy watching this team play?
I would say at no point in the season did I enjoy watching them. There was not a moment that I enjoyed. Their win over Southeast Melbourne, their home win over Southeast Melbourne, that was good. The win in Perth, yeah, with DJ playing like he can, that was good. But I didn't. They played too much ISO ball. They played. They didn't go to their strengths. You know, if you've got guys that can do certain things, you want to see them in those positions where they can do them, and you've got to accommodate that. And I think there was far too much. I thought this was the same problem with Brisbane. I thought Nathan Sobey handled the ball far too much. And with Adelaide, Jerome Randall handles the ball far too much. And Jerome is an ooh-ah player. He's going to do things that make the crowd go, ooh-ah, look at that. Oh, maybe he broke that guy's ankles. Ooh. So he's a crowd pleaser. But is he a winner? And the answer to that, I'm sorry, the answer is no. He will win you some games. Now, he had the winning shot against New Zealand over in New Zealand. But does a team like Sydney cut him loose if they think they can win a championship with him? The answer is no. So they brought in Casper Ware, who they think can help them win a championship and probably will. So I think Adelaide's committed to an import who will put bums on seats but will not put W's, not put numbers in the W column, unfortunately. So that's problem number one. And then I just felt that there were guys that needed to take a step up and didn't. You know, Harry Froling, Rookie of the Year 1 year, and, you know, Schnookie of the Year the next year. He was hardly even a patch on what he was the previous season. Yeah. His sophomore season was bloody awful. Anthony Drimmick looked like he was going to take that step up into the Mitch Creek type role and did occasionally, but he still gets too caught up in himself and the referees and come on, you know, where's the foul on that call and the sort of the knucklehead stuff that he's got to grow out of, because he could be one of the best defensive players in this league. And if he was a great defensive player, his offense could just spin off that because his focus would be at the other end. And then he would be a very, very strong offensive player instead of being still so emotionally connected to his offense, so that if that's not dropping, then it's the ref's fault or this fault. Now I'm going to bump somebody. Now I'm going to get into it. Like the sort of distractions that they have, you know, just I thought that team was – it was hard to watch them. If you're starting Brendan Tees at his age and Obi Shea at his shooting ability, you aren't winning a championship. You're not making finals. So clearly Eric Griffin – couldn't hold down a starting spot because he'd be in foul trouble because he's got no foul discipline. So you had to bring him off the bench. Now, if Harry Froling is playing up to what he was in his first season, then Harry and DJ as the starting 4-5 might have been a better combination. But obviously, Harry wasn't getting it done. So, yeah, there were some people that really needed to elevate, and I don't think they did.
The big positive, do you take anything positive from this year? I mean, some of Joey's comments, I'm having a hard time with this myself.
I don't think there's much that's positive for the team.
The move to the entertainment centre. There we go. That's right.
The move to the entertainment centre was a positive move. If those 7,000-odd that they had as their average attendance, if they all paid, then I think it's a very strong move. If they all paid.
Okay, I'm hearing you loud and clear. The big negative for me, it was just some of Joey's. Okay, you perform poorly on the court, that happens. If you play hard, that there's no problem with that. The lack of playing hard and the selfishness, and Joey coming out in the press conference and saying people on the team pillage from the sport of basketball.
Yeah.
Body, what precedes? Yeah. You can't just pillage. What precedes pillage? You know, there's always Genghis Khan just pillage. Bad side.
The pillage was the second part of the village. Everyone was already
they pillaged. Did they do anything before the pillaging? Who's for blame?
I think he was looking for some locker room influence in Kevin White and Daniel Dillon, and Whitey might have come through. I'm not sure he was as happy with Daniel Dillon, but I'm talking out of turn there because I haven't spoken to Joey lately to sort of pick up on that. But I think he picked the bulk of that team based on what budget he was allowed. Let's not forget that. And some guys just let him down.
Yeah. What have I got here? At the start of the year, I prescribed this team a song. It was Booker T and the MG's Green Onions from that scene. Have you seen the Sandlot kids? You know, when the posh team comes to meet the Sandlot, they're sort of raggy doll team of kids. And then this posh team with all nice uniforms comes in and they cream them. you know? And I thought that was going to be this team with when they had Deshaun Taylor. I thought they were going to be defensive-minded, but in Joey's system, get up and down. My question to you, buddy, would this team have been better with Taylor in the place of perhaps Randall, maybe even Griffin, and go super small? Let's say with Randall. Do you think they would have been better with him?
No, I don't. I think he's shown in Sydney what he's, where he's at this point in his career. And in that role that he's got, that he's fulfilling in Sydney, he's very effective. I think management felt they needed to improve in that position. And in Jerome, they got a better player. You know, there's no question he's a better player at this point in his career and able to put bums on seats, popular in Adelaide, all that sort of stuff. So there were other things at play there. Would I have liked to see Deshaun Taylor see out the season? It's too much of a hypothetical. The answer is probably no.
Yeah, I would kind of go the other way with this. I think if you had Deshaun Taylor, would you have won 12 games? I mean, 12's not a difficult mark. I mean, but would you have had Joey coming out at the end of the year and saying, we had guys on this team that ...
No,
totally not. So. And maybe that equates to a few, maybe not more wins, probably maybe more wins. But certainly not the fracas that happened at the end.
Yeah, better harmony. So maybe better harmony does mean more wins. So yeah, you got an argument. Yes.
I had two actually.
Me too.
I had the first one. I'll do mine first. You can. Be Thankful for What You Got by William Devon. Have you heard that song?
No, but it does sound good. Brothers and sisters, can still stand tall. Just be thankful
for what you got. So it's about, like, you may not have a Cadillac, but you got a beautiful song, really, really nice song. And that's obviously directed at those comments Joey made about guys need social media to get up, so on and so forth. You know, like, you may not be in the NBA, but you're playing for the Adelaide 36ers and getting clapped to play basketball.
Yes,
that was my song.
Okay, you've lost that loving feeling.
Good one. Yeah.
And also, an old John Lennon song, Mind Games.
My other song, and I'd hate to use this one because I feel this song is almost very, very sanctimonious. A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke.
Yeah.
I think that's a beautiful song. I think that's in their future for a number of reasons.
Obviously.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been
a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
Let's jump off. New Zealand Breakers, it seems crazy to get to them so early because I thought they had a really nice year, but 15 and 13, up 3 wins on NBL 19. The song I chose at the start of the year was Use Me by Bill Withers. If they can, because the next stars is a little bit of like, what can you give me? What can I give you? And I thought if they can manage that, you know, using of each other, then it can work. And that song, if you've heard it, is about a young guy with an older woman who's a socialite, and they're kind of working that balance of what can you give me, what can you give them. I don't think it quite worked out for them. But my first question to you, buddy, did you enjoy this team?
Not initially, no. I saw them in the preseason a couple of times. I think we saw one of their games together. I thought they were just a train wreck. They were all over the place. Everybody had a say. Everyone had an opinion. And Dan Shamir, I think, it looked like he was struggling to sort of keep all these wild horses, you know, in check. And
is that song you chose, Wild Horses by the Rolling Stones?
No. I've got an Elvis Presley song for you in a minute. Okay. But at 4-10, I think Matt Walsh, as the owner, had a stroke of genius, although at the time I didn't think it, but the subsequent result showed it was, where he just turned around and re-signed Dan Shamir as the director of basketball, which is the euphemism for coach that they're using over there, having made that job redundant with his predecessor, Kevin Braswell, re-signing him for 2 more years. Now, this is a point where you're at 4-10. Now, if I'm shooting my mouth off on the team because I'm thinking, hey, we're going to get rid of this guy, he's going to get gone, they're going to axe him, and I'll be doing my thing. And suddenly you go, no, actually, he's staying. That means unless you pull your head in, you're going. And I reckon that was a stroke of genius because from 4-10, where they finish up?
15-13.
11-3 the rest of the way. So that actually I thought was a brilliant move. We can't ignore the fact that at the same time, Scotty Hobson also came back from injury, which was substantial, obviously. And shortly after that, Corey Webster went out and RJ Hampton was injured. So what that did was shorten the rotation a little bit. And everybody got a lot more comfortable with their role. So a lot of nice little pieces just fell into place from that moment that Matt Walsh reappointed Shamir for 2 years. So from that point, actually, yeah, I really did enjoy watching him play. I loved seeing the second lease of life that Tom Abercrombie suddenly had. I really enjoyed seeing Finn Delaney finally take the step. You know, yeah. He's threatened for years to be a good player. And he gives it to you every now and then. He's a coach killer. You know, he shows you something and you think, oh, yeah, I'll leave him out there, and then he does nothing. But now he's taken that next step, and that was fun to watch. So, yeah, I really actually enjoyed watching them, and I think the positives for them is if they can keep the bulk of that group together, they'll definitely be around the mark next season, no question.
I was going to say the big negative. Do you have other than the Rice thing? And what do you think?
Oh, negative. Well, yes. That happened. And that was part of their season, part of the debilitating part of their season. But they got over that, and they came back with such a wet sail that, you know, this whole percentage thing is nonsense. But I understand why they're doing it. I just hope they only do it this year because it sucked. And the wrong teams, there are teams that should be in the playoffs. When you do it as head-to-head, this would have made it a head-to-head between Melbourne, Brisbane and New Zealand. It would have been interesting to see how that worked out. Mm-hmm. Had they all played each other the same amount of times? That's the problem. When you play everybody So when you've got 8 teams and you play your 7 opponents 4 times, it's 28 games, and you've got 4 results that you can call on against your opponent, 2-2, 3-1, okay, whatever it is. When you're playing some teams 3 times and some teams 4 times, because now you have 9 teams and you're still trying to condense it into a 28-game season, when it should be a 32-game season, then you have to have an alternative way of determining the positions, which is obviously how they came up with percentage, which is a terrible system. It's a terrible system, not just because of what's happened to New Zealand and Brisbane, but because it also, you know, if you're 20 up on a team, you now have to beat them by 30 or 40 to sort of bolster your percentage, whereas there was a time when you could then clear your bench and give your guys your DPs, et cetera, a chance to run around a little bit too. So I think on every level the percentage system sucks, but they've got to get back to a 32-game season to make it work.
The one thing that – I don't know if it's a negative or a perplexing question for me is you talked about how when they got good when Scott Hobson came back. Corey Webster also departed at that time. He was having a seemingly pretty good year when they were losing. Yep. Is there an element of looking to next year, because he is contracted for next year, are you filled with optimism? Like, oh, Corey's returned to this team. Or are you filled with a little bit of like, if it ain't fixed, don't broke it. Is there a problem in Corey's game or something like that? Are you struck by any of that?
No, I think Corey will fit. I think Corey's main thing is he wants to win. And he wants to win another championship with that group. So and they'll have time to sort of sort it out. I think this time they were a little bit top heavy with Corey and RJ Hampton and, you know, everyone that had to sort of get in the game. You clean that up a little bit. And I think they're going to be a big threat next season if they can keep the guts of this team together.
Okay.
Your song?
Yeah. Song, please.
What was yours?
Mine was, well, we talked about re-upping for next year. Yep. Let's Stay Together by Al Green. I really think they should re-up. I think they've got the ages work out quite well. Your worries are Henry and Abercrombie. They're age, that some guys just get to an age where they just fall off a cliff. I hope it's not those two, and certainly Abercrombie showed it probably isn't. But yeah, go again. Go again and get a whole year.
I'll have to take Let's Stick Together out of my Cairns one then.
No, I'm sorry.
No, I was actually going with Heartbreak Hotel because I just thought, you know, that was so unlucky. So unlucky in the end not to be there.
Well, if your baby leaves you, you got a tale to tell. Or just take a walk down the lonely street to Heartbreak Hotel, where you will be. Because so lonely, baby, well, you will be lonely. You'll be so lonely, you could die.
Next team, Brisbane Bullets, 15-13, up one win on NBL 19, but out of the playoffs, unlike last year. Did you enjoy watching this team?
I enjoyed watching Lamar Patterson. I enjoyed watching Will Magnay. I didn't enjoy watching Hodgie getting into foul trouble all the bloody time or fairly regularly. Still at this point in his career, you know, stop getting those stupid, silly reach in, push, bump, dopey little fouls. I got frustrated with that. I got frustrated watching Sobey hanging on to the ball. I got frustrated watching Cam Glidden unable to identify what his role is in that team for the first half of the season. I actually think their season changed when Lamanis quit as Boomers coach.
Oh, big time.
I think, you know, from that point on where his focus became just his team, if you look at the first half of the season, second half of the season, chalk and cheese, and suddenly people understanding their roles a bit better. I did not enjoy watching them consistently. I did enjoy watching a couple of their players. That's about it. I thought the negative was their imports and how that impacted on Ruben Tarangi and guys that just didn't know where they fit anymore.
I mean, I liked Braun. His assist to turnover ratio never made a mistake in his life. You know, he just was so clinical. Was he a wow? Was he a Jerome Randall ooh and R player? No, far from it. He's not that at all. But was he capable? I loved his scoring at the end of quarters. Like, he was a guy who did it in any moment. I actually really feel like there was good value in him. Did they need that value? He's a nice car, but if you've got one in the garage that's the same, do you need to spend on that? But that was a conversation all year. And you're right when you say about Lamanis. I felt like you watched the latitude that his shoulders were at when he was with the Boomers coach. His shoulders were up around his ears, tense. And as the season, they slowly came down a bit. I could see it. As you said, though, Patterson was really, really good. He's a spectacular player. Any deficiencies they need to address for next year? Like, if you looked at that team and thought, what the number one thing they need to do to get better and get back in the playoffs?
Well, I think they've got to be a little bit more prudent with their imports. I think they need a point guard, a genuine point guard. You got Sobey, who's a shooter first, passer second. You got Jason Kadee, who's a shooter first, passer second. He's probably a better point guard if you're just talking about, you know, the two combo guys that they are, who's more happier at the point and can address the issues at the point better. I'd say Jason can, but they probably really need a playmaker, somebody that actually, you know, one of their imports should be that. One of their imports should be Lamar Patterson. And then you can look around and see what else, where are we deficient? What else do we need? Because they've got they've got plenty of two men. They've got two men coming out of their ears. Yeah. So you know, I don't know. I think that's the key thing to me, because I don't think Nathan Sobey's a point guard. Never have thought Nathan Sobey's a point guard.
But capable player, right? You still feel
absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. No. Yeah. No question about his ability or whatever. But his decision making, his ability to recognize that, oh, this guy's gotten hot, we'll run some more stuff for him. You know, I just don't. He doesn't have. He's not wired that way. Mm. You know, someone needs to be wired that way for him, so that when he gets rolling, they're getting him the ball.
Yeah, right. Before I give my song for this team, I just want to say why. So I feel like this team should have made the finals. I feel like they're pushed towards the end of the year. Like, I really like Magnay. I really like Patterson. I thought Braun was capable. Sobey, if they could work out what they're going to do with their backport. I feel like it was a little bit of a disappointment. This team lost to Southeast Melbourne, who I liked, but they did lose to them twice this season, losing the home and away. You know, they played each other three times, so they were down on them. If they just won one of those games, they're in the finals. And I just feel like it's kind of, again, with Lemanis, like this is the Olympic equivalent or the NBL equivalent of finishing fourth. You're close. Yep. And all we got, well, it was exciting, but ultimately it's like, well, we're not playing next weekend. And, you know, that's a bit of a drag. What song did you have as the song to represent this team?
A beautiful Rolling Stones song, I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
They were. They tantalized, but they didn't quite.
Mm.
I'm going off what I just said, I had You Should Be Dancing by the Bee Gees. I feel like they should be there. And also the Bee Gees, while technically English, did live in Brisbane as well.
Yes. Yes.
Let's jump onto the next team. We're in the finals now. Melbourne 15 and 13, down 3 wins on NBL 19. Did you enjoy watching this team, buddy?
At times I did, times I didn't. I didn't enjoy it when they ran a lot of isolation plays with Mello Trimble and Sean Long just dominating the pick and roll, pick and roll, pick and roll. And you've got, you know, talent to burn all around, just basically, you know, biding their time. I think from the moment they recognised, I don't know who it was that recognised, I think it would have to have been Dean Vickerman, that Chris Goulding is your route to a championship, not Mello Trimble, who's still a young man, not Sean Long, who behaves like a young man. It's Chris Goulding. He's the guy that won the Larry Sengstock medal as the MVP of the championship a couple of years ago. He's the guy you need, you know, getting the ball to him, making things happen through him. And I think taking Trimble out of the starting lineup, putting Shay Ely in, who I think has been a really good recruit for him, actually, that has changed the dynamic. And so I've actually started to enjoy watching him play again in the last little bit because of that, because now Chris Gordon's getting off, feeling good. And then when Trimble comes in, he's a real spark off the bench. So I think they might be getting it right now. And so, yeah, now I'm enjoying them, but earlier I didn't. And plus, David Barlow was just stinking.
Missing.
For so long. He was just terrible. I mean, he's come good. He has come good.
Absolutely.
No question. And hats off to him. But, wow, they carried him for a long time.
Just naught. Dave Barlow's playing? Oh, okay. I didn't know that. You know, those sort of games, which are the worst.
And you know, Casey Prather, that was a bit of a saga probably preyed on everyone's minds, going on in the background all the time. Is he, will he, won't he? I'll be happy to see how he goes next year after having this year off and getting his body right. I think they'll be very interesting again next year. But, I enjoyed watching him towards the end, and I'm looking forward to what they might bring now.
Yeah, I likewise. Big negative, like, is there something you looked at and thought, oh, that just shouldn't have happened for this team?
I think they probably should have really reviewed the power forward position, because I don't think David Barlow was exceptionally brilliant last year in that, and they still got to a championship series with Perth. Mm. I thought that was one they should have maybe examined and looked around as to who might be ready to take the next step. But the other thing about David, he's not getting younger. You know, he's not drinking from the fountain of youth. So
he's Mark Worthington's age.
Yeah. So we're in that situation where I think they have to look at that. I also think that their expectation of Mello Trimble was unrealistic. And I think he's had to find where he fits with this group. I'm not 100% convinced he knows yet. I really am not, but I think he's getting there. And I want to cut him some slack, because he is a young man, and we just tend to think that they arrive from the, you know, the US, they know everything. Well, they don't. They don't. No. They've got to be taught as well.
I think a name that was on this list last year that would have really helped this year, Venky Joyce. I think he would have been a nice compliment to David Barlow. You've got Barlow, who's an outside shooter and big and strong. Venky's a little bit more athletic. I think the two of them would have been a nice thing. Trimble and Long, obviously they've come from losing programs. So I think they won as many games together as they have this year with Melbourne. The big knock on them is they don't know how to win, or even that they're selfish. Do you see that when you look at both of them? You don't see it with Trimble, but what about Sean Long?
I don't think they're so much selfish as immature as players yet. They haven't, you know, it's what I mentioned earlier when I was talking about Anthony Drimmick. Sometimes players get too emotionally connected to scoring. So if they're not scoring, that you know, it just destroys their whole psyche. Oh, I can't do anything, and now I'm going to pick up two stupid fouls or throw the ball out of court because I'm not scoring. I think that as you mature as a basketballer, you know that, yes, yeah, scoring is important, but so are 20 other things that you can do. Yeah. And I don't think they're there yet in their careers, that they've arrived completely at that spot yet. And they're young guys, so cut them some slack because they will. I mean, I think Trimble just shows that he wants to be better. He wants to do what you need him to do. He's just not always sure what it is. So I don't necessarily think they're selfish and self-absorbed in the most negative ways. I think they're just not completely mature as players yet and don't completely understand where they fit and what else they can do. And when they get to that, wow, I'd like to have them in my team then.
I agree. And I heard a lot of stuff in the press about, you know, these two guys they don't play defense and they're tearing down Melbourne United. And I don't know if you're with me with this, but I mean, Melbourne United's been around for a while now. They've won a championship. They were in their grand final last year. I don't think they're that brittle of an organization that two guys could come in for half their games, mid-season, this sort of stuff come up, and they're tearing the team down. I just thought, how fragile must United be if that's the case? And I always thought, we saw it in the last three games. Once they started to refer to Chris Golding and, to a lesser extent, David Barlow, this team found itself. And my thought was always, well, hang on. How can Melo, Trimble and Long supposedly be tearing this team down when they've got two guys in their 30s who've been to not only this league in the championship but the Olympic Games? And I just thought that was total BS and really unfair. Yes. So my question to you, Boddy, is the import blame game. When does this league progress beyond it?
Never.
Never.
Okay. No, they'll always. It goes like this: the imports suck, sack the coach. It's going to be. That's the
chain of command. Imports suck.
Yep. And so either we've got to fix the imports. We can't do that. Well, look, this coach. Well, I don't know. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know what's that. Why did he sub so and so on him? Oh, you know, that's where people go. And now that we have the advent of social media, people can express that in so many lovely ways. Whereas once upon a time, after a game, you just hung around the bar for a while, had a couple of beers, shut your mouth off and went home and life went on. But now we can actually impact on clubs' thinking and on what a coach thinks of himself, what a player thinks of himself, if they're silly enough to read it and add some sort of weight to it. So I don't. Like, as I said, I don't get cross about Sean Long or Melo Trimble and the mistakes they've made, because I just think they're young men at a young point in their careers. You know, if we fast forward Melo Trimble to Casper Ware's age and experiences,
amazing.
Do we have a great player or do we still have the same?
I love Trimble and his ability to get to the foul line. It's one of the things I think is most important in basketball. You stop the clock in a 10-minute game, you easy basket. And he just got to the foul line more than Bryce Cotton this year. He was number one in free throw attempts and makes and percentage. Yep. To beat Bryce Cotton, who every time he takes a three-pointer, gets fouled by someone, is pretty impressive.
That happens when you kick your legs out. Yeah. The thing about Melo is that he just has to work out where all those things that he can do fit into making his team successful. And once you've grasped that concept that no matter what your numbers are, the number that a recruiter is looking for, that a scout is looking for, that the NBA is looking for is, did you make your team a winner? Are they winners? Are they champions? Right. That's the big number, not 24.3 points per game and 6.2 assists. It's how many championships you won. Like Darnell Mee, when he was playing for the Adelaide 36ers and won back-to-back championships.
Not great stats.
Yeah, I don't know what his numbers were. They would have been bloody awful probably for an import. But he made that team a winning team. He made everybody around him better. And he had no trouble picking up contracts. None.
Here's a way to phrase it. I think it's all about the words you use and words meaning. This team won three games less than they did last year when they made the grand final. And they did it without arguably their best player, Casey Prather, out injured pretty much all year. Yep. When you phrase it like that and not how people like to phrase it, which is, when you consider what they've spent, I find this an odd thing where they probably did spend a lot. Don't doubt that. But it's like if you went to a bar and a guy's there going like, all right, everyone, drinks are on me. You can get the top shelf stuff. And then you walk out of that bar and you go, oh, it was fun, but we could have got just as pissed on beer. It's like, well, thank you. That's not the spirit, though, is it? Like, who cares? He spent the money. Why are you upset about what he spent?
Oh, nice, too. It's not the spirit. Well done. That was a nice one. Threw that in. Go on.
It just drives me nuts. Like, okay, they spent. They got, they won 15 games. Down on last year, but they didn't have Casper Ware. They were out there injured player. I just don't get where this team had this fundamental failure that is being made out. I don't get it.
Yeah, no, I think people are a little bit too critical. There's a lot of knee-jerking goes on. And in our mainstream commentators and people that have a voice in the sport now, they're often, you know, over the top in what they say. You know, somebody's great or somebody's terrible. There's no in between. It's 0 or 100. And I think people buy into that nonsense and don't actually sort of step back and go, okay, well, what could this team be? You know, like when Melbourne started off, they had to go play NBA games. They started off slowly as we expected, and then they picked up and they were pretty good. And then they've had a bit of injuries, import issues, things they've had to negotiate and find their new identity. And I think they found it. If I'm Sydney, I'm not as confident as I was a couple of weeks ago.
Would you rather face, if you're Sydney, would you rather have Brisbane or New Zealand or Melbourne? Which team would you be more confident against?
I think they'd be very confident about Brisbane. I think they'd be very confident about New Zealand. I'm not sure whether that confidence would be justified, but I think they would be fairly confident about their ability to knock them off. I don't think Sydney's afraid of anybody.
No,
but,
I agree.
Melbourne could definitely – they'll definitely take a game off them, I'm sure.
Chris Golding can shoot it. Song for this year. Do you have a song for the Melbourne United?
Well, I had two. I had a little bit of a Chubby Checker, The Twist. Because they twisted it right there at the end. And also perhaps good old Carpenter song, We've Only Just Begun.
Oh, beautiful Carol Carpenter. She's amazing.
We've only just begun to live.
I had a song by Etta James called I'd Rather Go Blind, which is a song about her singing. Have you heard that song?
No, but there is a way you can go blind if you want to try it.
This song is about, it's not about that. It's about a different blind. It's about she sees her husband or boyfriend or whatever in a cafe with another girl, and she's singing about that pain of she'd rather go blind and see that again. And I feel like that was a little bit of Melbourne United watching Casper Ware's success all year and close up. They'd rather go blind than have to see that again.
And I would rather be a blind girl, babe. Than to see you walk away from me, baby. Cause you see, I love you so much.
Jumping on. Melbourne United, we've done them. Who's next? Cairns Taipans. 16-12, up 10 wins from NBL 19. Strong case for Coach of the Year, Mike Kelly.
Most improved Coach of the Year.
Did you enjoy watching this team, buddy?
Absolutely. I think I probably enjoyed watching this team the most, especially when they were rolling. I mean, I think we again, got a little bit caught up in how good Scott Machado was and also Cam Oliver. And I don't think DJ Newball got enough credit. He made big shots in big games and big moments. And then what they got out of Nate Juwai in limited minutes was very much better than anyone's got in the last few years. And if Kwiat Noi doesn't get hurt when he did, perhaps they win a couple more games. I really liked him. I thought what Majok Deng, he made a good call in leaving Adelaide and has become a pertinent, relevant, good basketball player who plays defense, which he never did in Adelaide. I just kids like Mirko Jerick and Kristlovic, geez, I mean, they're fun to watch because they're into it, they're enjoying themselves. And the crowd's great. No, there was not a moment I didn't enjoy the Cairns Taipans.
Did you have a big positive where you thought, how great that this has happened for the Taipans?
I think the fact that they've made the playoffs and they've made it so convincingly, and they haven't limped in on the back of, say, four wins over Illawarra. I mean, they only got one out of the full.
Yeah, true.
So they didn't. If they had beaten them in all of those games, they would have probably finished second or something. So, or maybe even been challenging for the number one spot. So, they did it by beating good teams, and they did it at home and on the road. So yeah. I was just really, really thrilled for that program because you know they don't operate on the same budget as everyone else, and which means they've got to be really discerning in the imports they select and in the Australian content, you know, and I reckon they just really got it right, so much more than any of us foresaw.
Yeah, and I think my big positive was a step forward in those locals, Ding.
Yeah.
And also, quietly, Fabian Kreslovic. I thought he was like, okay, he's a guy who can give you 10 to 15 really solid minutes, bigger body, rebounds quite well, hits a couple of shots, plays a bit of defense. I really just thought, okay, he may not be a star, but he's going to be, you know, a really serviceable player for them in a small market. He's probably going to hang around. I just thought, okay, that's really nice. Start of the year, I gave them the song, and it was, do you know who Gil Scott-Heron is?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah,
I do know.
He's a sort of poet-y singer. So Inner City Blues is actually a cover, I think, of Marvin Gaye's song. It's about the disenfranchised, the downtrodden, and the underpaid rising up. And I thought that summed up their year coming in. It also talks about, Gil Heron talks about his love for Mark Essex. Do you know who Mark Essex is?
No, I know who David Essex is, but that's
No. Mark Essex was a guy, a Black Panther who went on a killing spree in Louisiana. Google it. Amazing story. But anyway, that was my story. Not that part of it. That was, but there was them for this year. The negatives. Did you feel like their last round two games losing streak, did that put a sour taste in your mouth for moving into
finals? It did. That was the biggest negative of the season. To lose two games in the last round by combined 52 points, that's not losing. That's getting whacked.
And turn the ball over like crazy. Yeah,
whether the momentum loss is going to harm them going into the playoffs, we'll know pretty soon. I'm more hopeful that the week off, that the FIBA window that of the four clubs contesting the championship, probably they needed that break the most to regather their mojo, for want of a better term, and just maybe watch some footage of themselves playing good basketball, and this is how we're supposed to do it, and maybe they can pull that thing together. But that was a very, you know, given that if they had actually won the first game over United, I think it was, there was still a chance to pinch second spot. So, I mean, it was a long shot, but, it's
possible.
To lose by 52 over two games, over the course of two games, 16 and 36, was very disappointing.
What I was scared about as well for them was looking at it, a real return to, like, watch Scott Machado, just stand back and kind of watch a bit of one-out stuff. There wasn't that same confidence in their shot. Like, I think for this team, the barometer is Jerich. How he shoots it, how he's confident. Is he snappy? Is he quick? And he had a bad last round. I just felt like he felt that pressure of, it's finals, we're getting a little, and he took a step back. Hopefully he's got that out of his system because they need him to make shots in the finals. Their success is really aligned with him. Just being that annoying where, you know, a long rebound comes out, it's in his hands, and you're like, okay, I don't know this guy so well. And then he smacks a three, and he's got that weird jumper shot.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, oh, God, okay, all right, fair enough.
Yeah.
So he's the guy. So I hope he can turn around.
And your song?
Song for the Cairns Taipans was I went BGs again, the Queensland vibe. I went Jive Talkin'. I just, if you listen to more the melody of that song, if you listen to it, it's just that, you know, there's been a bit of a jive, like they've got the jive, but there's that little stumble this last round. So that was my, and also, there's a line in that song where it goes, "Are you grooving or telling me lies?" Because jive means to lie, but the Bee Gees sort of had a cultural misappropriation moment where they thought it meant like dancing. So, are you dancing or are you a lie? That's kind of my song for.
I went post Beatles, Paul McCartney and a John Lennon. The Paul McCartney was "Maybe I'm Amazed." Because I think I have been amazed by what they've done, and the John Lennon one is out of the blue.
Misery.
Perth Wildcats, their opponent in the first round, 19-9, up one win on NBL 19, but out of top spot. Did you enjoy watching this team?
At times I did, yes. As the year wore on, I enjoyed watching them more. I always have faith in Perth. Pointless, the 30 plus years of making playoffs, etc. But they're very consistent. I think Trevor Gleeson doesn't get nearly enough credit for what he does with that group. I think that's probably people have a bit of a mind.
Are you surprised that people found him unlikable?
No, I'm not surprised. If you don't know him, I've had a little bit to do with him. We've had some conversations, and I think he's a charming guy. But that's away from basketball. And people are going to judge him on his sideline, and, oh, look, he's whinging again, he's this, he's that, you know. And he probably gets a negative reputation as a result of the way he works the referees during every single game. And yeah. I can understand that. But I don't necessarily think that should impair his ability as a coach or impair people's opinions of his ability as a coach, because he does some very clever things. He does smart things out of timeouts. Occasionally just changes a defense up when he knows the opposition is going to try and run a particular play for man. He'll come out in a zone. He's a smart coach. Yeah. In fact, with all due respect to Will Weaver, I would much rather have seen him in charge of the Australian team in these last two games.
Yeah.
Because he is an Australian coach and has been involved in the program. But that's a different discussion. I think he's done a very good job. I think he consistently talks about Wildcat basketball until they actually have all bought into whatever Wildcat basketball is. I think it's just Damian Martin calling in-game huddles. But they're fun to watch. They are fun to watch. When Bryce Cotton gets going, when Tarico gets going, Nick Kay just does what he needs to do. You know, he doesn't go outside his skill set.
Never.
And he's very good within that skill set. I certainly like them. And now when you add Miles Plumley, if the referees allow him to play a little bit, I'm really looking forward to seeing him and Bogut go head to head. So hopefully we'll see that. Hopefully we get to see that in some form.
Let's jump to the positives are obvious. The big negatives, though, like I look at two things. One was probably the Dario Hunt. It was a weird situation. Decent player, kind of had a nice skill set, just didn't work.
Yeah, wrong environment. Look, I saw that with Willie Farley going back.
Willie Farley
comes into Adelaide. They win a championship. He goes to try out for the NBA. Adelaide's got to move on. They sign new imports. He doesn't get in the NBA. He gets signed by West Sydney. And he's a terrible player for West Sydney. Doesn't fit their program. He's just the same athlete, same skill set, but he's no longer in that environment. It didn't work for him, whatever it was. So then he comes back to Adelaide after that. He's a star again, runner up in the MVP. So Dario Hunt, maybe that's what we've got to think about Dario, that in a different environment, maybe he might have thrived in Cairns, who knows?
I agree. The marriage of skills just wasn't there.
I think the other negative is that Damo is getting more vulnerable to injury.
He barely played.
Yep. Which I still think he was unlucky not to get the Defensive Player of the Year award. I thought they might just give it to him for the hell of it, like they did last year or the year before. Sorry, last year Dane Pinot was collecting for Andrew Bogut, if I recall correctly. The last one he won, I thought he was really lucky. And this year I thought he was unlucky. Jeez, he played six games, he should have got.
Yeah. Tarico White is another negative. His health, his fit is fine. I have no problem with him turning it on. That seems to be his MO at this point. I'm totally locked in and think he'll have a good one. But yeah, he just sort of, he looked hurt. It's one thing about turning it on and not quite, but when you actually hurt and towards the end of the year, like he just went totally missing in a couple of games. What did you think about Tarico White?
I thought that was very similar to the previous season, to be honest.
Yeah, true.
And I think I'd be surprised if he's not prominent in the next six games, or potential six, eight games, whatever it is, three in the semis, five in the finals. I think we'll probably see the best of him in five of those eight games if it goes the distance.
Let's see. Let's hope so. Any obvious deficiencies in your mind for next season? I mean, they finished second. Is there any?
I think they're getting a little bit old. You know, I think Jesse Wagstaff is going to be sort of heading towards...
He's got two more years after this.
Okay, but Doesn't matter how many years he's got. You said it yourself.
How many good years? Yeah.
They lose a step. They lose a step. It's gone. You know, you can get old in an off season very, very quickly. And I think I'm disappointed with Rhys Vaig. I thought he should have taken a step forward this season, and I don't think he has. I think he's taken a major step backwards. Right. So because I think they had a few they had a few hopes in his basket that he would sort of come along, and I don't think he's getting it done. So yeah, there's a couple of question marks about some of the players going forward. So yeah, those are the negatives, but they're able to pull it together right now. They can win the championship. I picked them for the championship at the start of the season, and I still think, I mean, even more so now that Plumlee's there, if the referees let Plumlee play.
Going back to the age thing, like one thing that I thought was a bit of deficiency, Mitch Norton, I don't know if I see him progressing into the Damian Martin role. It's an odd thing to look at with Perth in their point guard spot, because Bryce, so you know, he sort of supersedes that spot into twins. But still, Norton for me, he offensively just doesn't have that, as Ned Zelich puts it, imagination or fantasy. I don't see the sort of like passing IQ, but the defensive IQ and that side of emulating Damian Martin, that I think is more than likely there. But what do you think? Is he a worthy or capable successor?
I think he's a capable successor. I think Hugh Greenwood was who they actually had in mind a few years ago, before before Andre Lemanis left Hugh out of an Oceania team, Australian team, where I think Hugh thought he would make that team and might be an outside chance for consideration for Rio. And when Andre just basically looked him off, and I can't even remember who called in then. That's testing my memory a bit too much. But it was somebody that was a bit surprised. And I think Hugh spat the dummy and thought, nah, bugger it, I'm going to football. And he's done very, very well with the Crows since then, and now on into Queensland. So good luck to him. But I think he was who they actually had earmarked at that time to be Damo's successor. So now you've got Nordo. And I think Nordo's ability to score is far greater than Damo's. So you know, he can have his 16-point game. And if Damian Martin has a 16-point game, you know, there's a parade through the main street of Perth. So he brings something a little bit different to what Damo does. I don't really mind. I don't see.
Let me pose your question. Would you rather have, you're the Perth Wildcats management next year, however they go, they go. Would you rather have Mitch Norton or Shay Ely as your starting point guard?
I'd rather have Matthew Dellavedova.
Ooh, interesting. That is, because he's sniffing around.
I don't think he's sniffing around the NBL. I think the NBL might be sniffing around him, because he might be coming towards the end of his NBA time.
I think so. Nick Kay came along at the right time of year. Yeah. He's had 25 and 10 in the last 5-6 games, or whatever it is. Actually, I've got it here. 22 points per game on 62% shooting over the past 5 games, last game of the season. It also coincides with Plumlee arriving with the team. Are you a believer in coincidence, or did something click into place?
No, that clicked into place. Obviously, it did. And so, because now he can just get on and be himself, whereas he had to be more than himself during Dario Hunt's time, because Hunt, you know, didn't even start some games and was in foul trouble in others. So Nick had to do a lot more than what his skill set really.
Or size as well.
Yeah. And so I think now having Plumlee there, that's just insurance he can get back to doing what he does. And what he does very, very well. So, yeah, okay, I keep saying, and I've said it a couple of times now, I'll say it again. If the referees let Plumlee play, if they let Sean Long play, if they let Nate Jawai and Andrew Bogut play, and the fact that these guys bump into each other is nothing. It's nothing. You don't have to call something. It's absurd. Saw it yesterday in the Hong Kong Australia game, or whenever that was on the other day. Someone set a screen. An Australian player set a screen in the middle of the floor, and some Hong Kong defender bounced off it, right? And the Australian kid gets a foul. And it's like, bullshit. There was no foul there. That was a great screen, and the guy hit it. What the guy that hit the floor should be doing is jumping up and yelling at his teammate, why didn't you tell me there was a screen there? But it's not up to the referee to go, oh, that was a bit of hard contact. What are we playing? We're playing basketball. You know, if you hit the screen and you bounce off, tough luck. And if you hit the screen and knock the screen over, tough luck. That's basketball. And, so let Plumlee, let Bogut, let Oliver, let Long, let Jawai, let them play. You know, when they're slapping at people and doing stupid, of course that's foul. But when they're just bodying up another big man, so what?
Mm. going back to the Wildcats, I mean, we talked about Bryce Cotton won the MVP. I really feel like if you took him off this team, they're in the lower end of the hunt for the playoffs. They're well, they are well in that Brisbane, New Zealand sort of conversation. Oh, yeah. Like he, he's yeah. that he is a 5 to 6 win difference in the NBL.
I think if he sticks around a few more years, which apparently you know he's chasing citizenship and he may well do, he will take the number one position over the all time best Perth Wildcat. He's still, you know, he's still got a few more years he's got to put in before that happens. But he's already won 2 MVPs, which is more than anybody else at that club. Yeah. So he's already well on his way. Yes,
it's true. Yep. With Hunt and Plumlee, do you feel like that change was not only the best for that team, or if I put it on a dial, do you lean to it being more like just the best result for their club, or do you feel it does cement them as championship contenders or even favourites?
I thought they would find a way to do it. I mean, I wouldn't have picked them to win the championship, you know, at the start, if I didn't think they would find a way.
They've got Plumlee. Oh, they're winning it now. You didn't have that
round. No, I thought they would find a way. And to be honest and be brutal, I thought if their imports aren't getting it done, they'll get rid of them. They'll get somebody else. They'll get someone better. That's what they'll do. And so that's what they did. So I'm not in shock like, oh, now they're a contender. No, they were always a contender because that's what they were going to do. If Hunt had set the world on fire and been brilliant, well, there would be no Miles Plumlee conversation. So that organization is about being successful. You know, I mean, the history shows it. Anyone who thinks otherwise is a knucklehead. So you've got to, you know, they're going to be in the mix. Cairns is a little bit of a wild card now in that semi-final series.
Let's talk about that. Yeah, so you're quite hot on Cairns to do something here.
I like them. I like the danger they represent, because what's everybody's expectation? I'll tell you what it is. Perth 2-0. That's the expectation. Perth will just knock them out. So there's no pressure on them whatsoever. Now, when you've lifted that pressure off a team and they can just go out and play and enjoy themselves and let the results fall where they may, who's the team under pressure here? Who's the team we're expecting to win? The Wildcats. They're the ones that'll be under pressure, because there'll be an expectation that if they don't win this, that something's gone wrong. So I think the psychological dynamic is very interesting. Now, also, there's a fair amount of youth in that Cairns team, and youth is irreverent. It doesn't go, we're walking into RAC.
Also, it also can be timid, though.
Well, that's the other thing. That's why we're Mike Kelly as Coach of the Year needs to be across that. You know, he's improved greatly since last year.
I think, this is the best. Oh, geez, Sydney Melbourne on front page glamour is the best series, but on nuts and bolts series, they're both actually really, really good. I can't wait for either. I just think Perth, their methodical nature. I think Cairns showed to me, especially in those last two games, that there is a unpredictability that I think the Wildcats will just, they'll just hammer the nail. They'll just hammer it until it just goes into the piece of wood. And just I just feel like the Wildcats don't, with the amount of turnovers that Cairns seem prone to, that Perth will...
And you got Damo harassing the hell out of Machado. Yeah, this is what we expect. But that's what I'm saying, that it's our expectation. There is
Chris Anstey put it best about Cairns. He goes, they've got length, 3-point shooting in, and athleticism, or size. I forget what it was. And that's this team. They're long. They're disruptive defensively, and then they just hit 3-point shots, which are really hard to replicate at the other end if you're not hitting the same. So you're right. Let's jump to Sydney Kings.
Hang on.
Songs.
Give me a person.
You go first. You go first.
Okay, well, I have two.
Okay. The
first one is Come Together.
Come together right now over me.
Good one. Beatles. Yeah, Beatles.
And We Will Rock You, a Queen song.
They had that place jumping and they were good. My song was from the Karate Kid movie. It's You're the Best Around by Joe Esposito.
You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
For a couple of reasons. They're in second spot, but they would still consider themselves the best, and they probably could, would, or should. And also because You're the Best Around. I think it's even Ivan Aguistegueta who makes this joke that you're the best in a radius. And obviously Perth, they've got the whole west coast to themselves. I put up a tweet the other day about this, like they should start a second team in Perth, and there was a bit of backlash about that. They're the best around. They've got two-thirds of the continent all to themselves. They're the best around.
I love Ivan Aristeguieta.
He's great.
Going to see him in a couple of weeks. He's here at the Fringe for the fourth year in a row. Very funny man.
If you go to YouTube as well, Apple Podcast, his latest special is totally free on the ABC Comedy app. You can listen to the whole hour, and that was where I got this this little joke from. Sydney Kings, 28, okay. Up 2 wins from NBL 19, top spot all year. Pretty impressive.
Yes.
Did you enjoy watching them play?
Some of the time, most of the time, yeah. Yep. Yeah. I enjoyed, especially early going, as I mentioned earlier when we were talking, that what Moller and Bruce brought off the bench was really good. I loved watching what their confidence and their ability to back themselves, etc. One day Craig Moller will work out why he's always open on the 3-point line. That hasn't quite, he hasn't quite worked that out yet, but one day he will. And then you look at the quality of Deshaun Tate. He surprised me. He's probably been the biggest surprise for me going from preseason to now. I had a question mark about him because of his size, that Charles Barkley power forward size where you sort of go, well, is that going to work? It did. He's great. Love him. Brad Newley, second lease of life. Loved watching what he's bringing, the way he's playing, the enthusiasm he's playing with. Didier Luzada is fun. Casper Ware, he'll be there when you need him to. When you need him.
Bad shooting year. Yeah, we talked about this. He just was overthinking it. I guess is the thing we came at, or over emotionalizing it is what we came to.
Yep. And then you've got Kevin Leash, of course. You've got Bogut. You're in pretty good shape here as a club. And then we've got Xavier Cooks. I think there's really no reason why a Kings fan should be thinking anything other than championship.
Big, let's go big positive. Is there anything of all those that stood out? Anything one in particular?
I really thought it was the way it came together for them because it's a school to mold a lot of disparate egos of players who are good basketball players. And you've always got egos. Every basketball player's got an ego, but when they're all good, they're good players to start with. To just get that thing to work and get everyone to buy in. I think that was a huge positive. That was probably Will Weaver's biggest success.
The negative.
They're not young. They're not young. Like Bogey's, 35? Mm-hmm. Dan Kickett, he's no spring chicken. Brad Newley, Kevin Lish. This team has to win now because this is not a team of the future. This is right now. So the negative possibly is that they're under a lot of pressure. After you've led the league the entire season, you're expected to win, and you're expected to win not comfortably, but convincingly. You're expected to be the team. So I think that puts a fair amount of pressure on them. The fact that they are older means that they should be able to cope with that because they've been down those roads before. So they should be able to handle it. But I'm looking forward to seeing how the playoffs actually roll out.
What about off the court? I mean, we had Paul Smith's stuff, ignoring just his vocality, if that's a word, on Twitter. I liked it at times, and other times, it was maybe a bit much. But then they've grown this team. Like, Sydney's a really tough market to bring any sports team, let alone basketball. And they seem to have done pretty well. What's your take on them off the court?
Yeah, I tend to agree. There were some things that Paul Smith put out that I thought, good on you. Stir it up.
Really funny stuff and engaging. I love it.
Yeah, and then there was a couple of times where I thought, oh, mate, you should have probably thought twice before you hit the send button on that one. So overall, I think off the court they've done okay. I didn't like Will Weaver's attitude in a couple of press conferences when I think he had a crack at a couple of journos. Just in the way he responded, I thought he was feeling the pinch a little bit there when they lost a couple of games and he got asked some questions about injuries. I thought he showed a little bit of brittleness there, and you really don't want to see that. You want to be seen laid back and going and relaxed, saying, oh, well, it is what it is, that sort of thing, rather than, oh, you think you know better than the doctors, do you? So, I don't,
I must have missed that.
Yeah, I think I did too. I might have just made that up.
What was I going to say? The youth movement, like they're young off the court. Yeah, they're young off the court. Like Will Weaver's got the iPad and the timeouts and things. Oh. They're young, and Chris Pongras is very young. They're young off the court, older on it. I mean, is that have you ever seen that before where a guy, I mean, Chris Pongras is sort of, he looks mid-30s. Maybe he's a bit older, young, I don't know. And he's calling the shots on these guys who are, you know, closer to 40 and played for so long and da-da-da. Did you find that interesting?
Mm. Yeah, of course. So gets back to what I said at the beginning when we started talking about Sydney a few minutes ago, is that probably the most successful thing they've done is get all these disparate egos of very good basketball players with good, strong opinions, opinionated basketball players.
Yeah.
Get them to all buy in because they had to have. You can't lead a league for 20 straight rounds if you haven't got buy-in. So that's probably their biggest tick.
Is there a team that less represents the city it plays in with its style? You know what I mean? Like this is a solely hugely defensive team in a city like Sydney that is so glamorous and should be an offensive run and gun. And this team is really gritty. I find that odd. Do you think there's a team that less identifies with the style of the
city? No, I think you nailed something there because they're wearing the Lakers.
I didn't nail anything there, but...
They're wearing the Lakers colors. Yeah, colors. So you want flamboyance, you want showtime, and you don't get it.
You get, Tate gives you a wee bit with the dunks. Oh, yeah. And the hoop. Yeah. But outside of him, it's a very, 3-point shots, layups and free throws and defense. And it's totally at odds with Sydney itself. What's the last
song?
Songs, please.
I had The Heat Is On from the Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack. And what about yourself?
Well, this is one that I actually sort of piggybacked off what you said. I think it was on Brad and Body last week. Everyone go and subscribe to the Brad and Body podcast. You said, are they in too much in love with each other? So my song was My Sharia More by Stevie Wonder, where he sings, the love is good. And you talked about when it's good, they're laughter and they're loving. But when it's a bit of pressure from the press, they kind of crack a little bit. And they love each other on Twitter. They're very communicative. In a tough series, are they too much up their own, whatever?
Clackers.
Yeah, there you go. Is the love founded? So that's why I'm sure. That's every team. Any last words on the finals? You don't see the upsets happening, do you?
I would like to see a Cairns Melbourne final, but that would keep us from seeing the one thing I really, really, really do want to see. Plumlee Bogut head to head. I would like to see that, and I'd like to see the referees put their whistles away when they're buffeting each other and jostling in the block. The only way you get that is if Sydney and Perth play in the grand final.
And you think that'll happen, or you want that to happen?
I expect that to happen, but I think we all do. And the way this season has rolled out, right down to the last game of the last round, we didn't know who was going to get there. So I hope that the finals are the same.
Perth. Can Perth win a championship not from top spot? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
You don't have a problem with that? The home team wins the final 75% of the time. It's a ridiculous percentage.
Yeah, but did Perth beat Sydney in Sydney? I know they lost the first time.
In the season?
Yeah.
Yes, they did.
Well, it's just another venue.
It's another venue.
Rings a 10-foot in the air. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right, buddy. Thanks very much for this. I really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. That was Body Nodge on NBL 20. Every team, what they did, what they should have done, what they could have done. I hope you enjoyed this episode. A reminder, rate and review the show and subscribe. Thanks very much. I saw it on your, I think it was your website or maybe just Twitter. Carole King's Tapestry came out 50 years ago.
Yes.
You're a fan of that album?
Oh, honestly, it changed my life. Absolutely changed.
And a lot of people of its time.
Mm. Yeah, and it introduced me to obviously her and that whole collage of artists, especially James Taylor, I couldn't quite call him a friend, but I do have had the opportunity to talk to him, and I've just been a lifelong fan of his music. And it all started with Tapestry. So when Carole King, she's actually on Facebook, the real Carole King. And so I just sent her a friend request, and she said, okay, fine. And I've actually chatted to her once or twice.
Wow.
And also there's a guy called Danny Korchmar, who was the lead guitarist for James Taylor throughout his early years, and also for Carole King. And he does the solo on It's Too Late, and recognizable solos on Jackson Browne or Linda Ronstadt. It's all Danny Korchmar. Well, he's on Facebook too. And so I kind of reached out, and he also accepted. And then I thought, well, that's okay. I won't push this at all. But then there was Don Henley from the Eagles was coming to Adelaide with his band, and his best solo album, or the one I think is his best solo album, it's one with Boys of Summer and a whole bunch of other things on it. Danny Korchmar produced that and played all the electric guitar leads on it. So I just sent Danny a message saying, I'm going to buy tickets to Don Henley if you're in the band, but if you're not coming, I'm not quite as interested. He said, look, I'm sorry, I'm doing sessions in LA at the moment. He's got a very good band. He's got Waddy Watel with him and a few other good ones. You know, you still go see him. I said, Danny, if it ain't you, it ain't worth going. And he was very, very nice about that, actually. I said, if you ever come into Australia, let me know. So then he sent me a message when James Taylor and Carole King toured a few years ago, their Troubadour tour, revisiting their first sessions, and they had their original band, which also included Russ Kunkel on drums and Leland Sklar, the guy with the big beard, that plays bass and was on all of Phil Collins' stuff. I don't even have a hint of a toenail in that door, but I do feel like I have a connection to them.
So what you're trying to say is you're a bit of a fan. There's a Broadway musical about her writing for her life. What's it called? Carole King.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful.
Beautiful. Oh, she wrote it. She wrote so much, and Motown stuff as well. What I wanted to talk about is the album cover. It's her sitting on a windowsill barefoot. She's got this sort of angelic light coming through. Her hair's sort of unfashionably frizzy of the sort of 67. There's a cat in the foreground out of focus. Yeah. It all reeks of a wholesomeness you just don't see on an album cover or even maybe in general anymore.
I read something about, or she might have posted something about the cat kind of just walking in and sitting down. And they just thought that was it. That's her cat, whatever it was at the time. Just walked in and sat down because it was shot at her place. And she thought, oh, well, leave it in. And it worked.
Amazing. Because, I mean, the only thing, it's obviously a wee bit before my time, but the one that is sort of the equivalent for me is Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. Now, I say that, I think that's like a female performer whose album was so stupidly popular. It was everywhere, and I'm sure you're with me that the best way to listen to Tapestry or Alanis Morissette was in the back seat of a car with two girls driving. If you ever listened to it in that circumstance, that's a special. Maybe I'm off my hinges. I don't know.
As long as it's not Thelma and Louise, we're good.
But I had a girlfriend who was not girlfriend, but friend who was a girl who was so into that album. She had it on tape. She was so into that album that it warped, and she and Alanis Morissette started to sound like Barry White.